Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Dynamite Preview. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to look ahead to tonight's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Rampage, Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0 pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamflett to look ahead to Dynamite tonight. Michael Sidgwick rather busy on a certain book of his. But nevertheless, Dynamite tonight, we are recording this on Friday, so if something's happened on Rampage leading to Dynamite, we're not going to be mentioning it here. But nevertheless, a hell of a card to look forward to. A couple of matches in that AEW title eliminator tournament to look forward to. But let's start with the trilogy fight between Malakai Black and Cody Rhodes, because this is fascinating. Black's 2-0, and I can't see him losing again. And this Cody Rhodes character, we haven't really had a chance to hear from you a lot about this weird journey he's been on with Armed Anderson and burning suits and then weird sort of training sessions in his gym. And we don't really know, you know, I know there's no heel, babyface, definitive things when it comes to Cody, particularly because he comes out through the middle entrance that's just his. But how do you see this playing out tonight?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity here to indulge myself a little bit in a bit of AEW conversation, because I've really missed it with you guys.
Yeah.
And in truth, I've missed too much of the product. So I've been spending a lot of time since come back to catching up and getting all caught up on all the programs. And this is one for the long-standing listeners amongst our wonderful community of listeners, because I can hate this Cody Rhodes story. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I was the... And here's the thing, right? I say that about the long-standing listener thing because anyone that's been listening to us for a long time, it's really kind of them. Whenever Cody does a very Cody thing, I know it's happened before, I've seen it, because I can see a big number against my, and like on my notifications on Twitter. Yeah. And I'm not that popular a guy. And I'm thinking, oh, Cody's done a thing. And like, I didn't love being this guy that was there to like the official opinion have it on Cody Rhodes. For a long period, I just didn't like his shtick. I didn't like his work. I did like his work. I didn't like his act very much. I didn't feel it as a baby face. I completely came around on it in 2020. He was one of the beating hearts of this beautiful AEW product in a time where everything else was awful.
Yeah.
AEW is great. Cody was such a great part of it. So all those old feelings are gone. However, Cody is such a schizophrenic presence in AEW that you are always around the corner from something awesome while on the road of something absolutely awful. What I mean by that is, take the Penta match. Out of nowhere, Cody versus Penta at like 2 weeks' notice with this fire promo that basically introduces Alex Abrahantes into the AEW universe, suddenly presents Penta as a killer all over again, like that. And then you get a match the following week, and Cody no-sells the arm breaker and pins him. Like, the weirdest thing, right? Cody's working an angle with Shaq, and the story is hideous. Mingin television follows Mingin television follows Mingin television. And the match is an absolute banger. Probably one of my favourite AEW matches ever.
Yeah.
Especially awesome because it was in the empty arena. Everybody felt that. It, like an immense buzz generated by this fantastic match. Shaq disappeared from an ambulance and nobody cares because it was so much fun. And it was like such a general performance from Cody. Cody was like, I know people hate the Triple H comparison, but the comparison is fair if you compare Triple H to Ronda's debut.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was a general that night in a very similar setup, in a very similar match. The whole thing was wonderful. So we're back again. in one night, a factory civil war is established by them absolutely battering Cody out. Nobody saw any of that coming. Like, it was always this case, like, oh, these jabroni losers from his gym are on TV again. And all of a sudden, it's splitting up. Like, the
and
reason
like,
they...
Shotty Lee Johnson, you think, oh, I forgot to mention QT Marshall. That's a bit of a bad promo there.
Why has Cody got 50 guys with him? This is really weird. Oh, it turns out it's because they're going to cut the whole thing in half. Really, really awesome. And the power of a Go-Go's punch is set up as this death blow. Beats him in a really bland pay-per-view match.
Where they built it as like, America!
I love Anthony Ogogo. Like, I think there is so much, like, crazy. And like, this is patronizing. The guy's an Olympic boxer. He could take all of our faces off in one punch. Like, but the raw rookie potential that guy radiates is, I think, some of the most exciting in all of professional wrestling. And I just think they got that match. It felt like they got that match wrong. You know,
when it comes to Anthony Ogogo, would you say something along the lines of,
Hey, you are right.
Oh, my God. I would, and then I would expect him to knock me out, and I deserve it. And knock you out, too, for pressing that button in the middle of this speech.
I guarantee he's going to be in the DMs later going, love the soundboard.
But, yeah, I just thought it just didn't feel right on the night, and the America-UK stuff was weird and that. This is Cody now.
Thankfully, Cody ended racism, though, there.
So that's that fixed. This is what I mean. It's such a... He tries everything, and not all of it can work, right? That's the long way of me saying, I hate what he's trying with Arn Anderson. I was the low guy in the Glock stuff, but I know people loved it and funny and fair enough. Like, I'll just take the L on that one. What's going on with the burning, like, literal dumpster fire outside Cody's house? Like,
yeah, I didn't
hot
really,
trash.
I didn't right? really get that. And I also don't really understand. Like, it was like, Black squashes Cody.
Yeah.
Cody comes back. Black beats him again.
To subvert the idea that Cody wins in the end.
Yeah, and
really
you go,
cool.
Okay, that's done. And they're like, Jabra trilogy.
Yeah.
This is like Fury Wilder if Fury won the first fight.
Yeah.
It'd be like, well, why are they having a third?
Why are we going to? The thing is, though, and this is where I want to be fair, and I want to appeal to people that still think that I'm some sort of like anti-Cody, like defense league or something. The story is blatantly going somewhere.
Yes.
I just don't know where, and I don't like watching it.
I said, we're going to be sitting here on Monday and saying, oh, it's genius. I'd never saw that coming, but it's right now we're in that weird spot, aren't we?
Black's beating him. There's no way this goes 2-1. How lame is it if it goes 2-1? Like, that's the worst case. Black's winning. Again, 3 now. This, if it was... I said after the last match, this is perfect. Separate Malakai Black and turn him babyface because people love this act. People love this guy. You don't need to even turn him overtly. You just position him against a heel instead of a babyface. He's just beaten Dante Martin.
Yeah, and gave him the little nod at the end.
Nod of respect. Martin is associated with Matt Hardy. Sorry, Leo Rush. So he's now like kind of associated with a heel who Malakai Black could be positioned against.
Yeah.
In another banger. And that's your babyface turn, isn't it? He's Black Master heel instead of a babyface.
Yeah.
And you can just cheer. The fans can cheer him as they have been doing without the kind of slight narrative guilt, because that's not quite the story. Mm-hmm. So he beats Cody on Dynamite, surely beats him on the show. And show me, Cody, Arn, whoever, show me what you're doing, because I believe so much in the end product without having a fucking clue what it is. Because that in-ring, I was with Cody, what the hell are we doing here, Arn? I was like, I agree. You've just bitten down on a beetroot or whatever it is to look like you've got a bloody mouth. What are we doing here? This is rubbish, but I've got so much faith in the outcome. This is it. I'm not biased against Cody because that's loyalty to him.
Yeah,
but I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm not of a fan of where it's gone recently. I will say that. But like you say, I can't look away. I want to see what they do next with like, and the fact they've got this spectre of a double turn, which can't happen because there's no definitive babyface heel thing with Cody.
Maybe it's just the greatest attraction piece in wrestling history, because not in 4 weeks nobody has once spoken about how funny it was when Arn Anderson fell flat on his ass. Nobody's mentioned that once, because we've gone in this crazy direction. So maybe it's just this the best ever tap on the shoulder, look the other way story in wrestling history.
It's a surreal trilogy, and we're hopefully going to get a satisfying conclusion to it tonight on Dynamite. We're going to look ahead in a minute to the championship tournament eliminator thing in some of those matches. But first, let's deal with sort of fallout of what's happened recently on AEW. Starting with CM Punk, what's next for him?
Look in my legs. What do you see? No material on my jeans. Because I'm rubbing my thighs every time that man appears on television. This is my favourite thing in wrestling in 2021. He's my favourite guy. I'm getting heart eyes. Adam Nicholas of this parish, wonderful man that he is, acknowledged something about me that I didn't realise myself. He said to me, I didn't know this about you, but CM Punk's on your Rushmore, isn't he? And I was like, I didn't know this about me, but CM Punk's on my Rushmore. I'm swooning for him. Brett's back and he's back here dressed as CM Punk and it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I am an advocate and I will not change my stance on this, that if the town is new, the town are going to want their night with CM Punk. So you do this, you ride this out as long as possible. I know there is a certain dissenting energy to the like happy, smiley Phil coming out and having his time with the audience, just being so pleased to be back in amongst all this. But that doesn't take into account the fans that just want their own United Centre night with CM Punk. If he was in Newcastle tonight,
yes,
we'd want to be part of that, wouldn't we? We'd want to have our own Chicago comeback with him. So I love it. I love it every week. I cannot get enough of it. And what's really awesome about it is that the whole point of this CM Punk run, as... am I going to blow smoke up my own ass? As some of us felt was going to be the case in the very beginning, was that it's a seven-year comeback. Mm. It's not going back at the top of the card. It's not making hay while the sun shines. It's a guy that's in it for the long haul. You've got about 2 or 3 years of CM Punk as a babyface and then 2 or 3 years of him as a heel.
Yeah.
It's absolutely captivating the different combinations of matches you can have. And as we saw with the Powerhouse Hobbs match, CM Punk is not a guy... I'll use a different example first. The Matt Sydal match was awesome from the CM Punk side, which is, he's an old friend, I need to see if I've still got it, while Matt Sydal was involved in a storyline with Leo Rush. It wasn't, CM Punk didn't burst into shot backstage and be like, I'll take that match and I'll see you on Rampage, because it wouldn't feel real.
No.
CM Punk is the guy cutting a very real human being promo saying, I'm just glad to be back and I want a respect fight with Matt Sydal and I need to know what I can do. And he had it. So, like, that's how you involve CM Punk in other people's daft stories. CM Punk gets pulled into an angle when somebody tries to ruin his night. Team Taz,
yes,
are such a bunch of miserable bastards that they want to spoil CM Punk's party. That made perfect logical sense. You now need to find somebody else that wants to kind of piss on his chips a little bit. You know, CM Punk comes out, he just talks about being great with the crowd, or he does his commentary, and a heel knows all it will take. I'll tell you what would be a great one. Because everybody is really keen to get CM Punk versus MJF. And that seems to be going via that notepad image of CM Punk versus Wardlow, did it not?
Yeah.
I'm going to propose to you that CM Punk's no-selling of FTR dressed as a Toxic Turtles was a work. And FTR are going to be pretty pissed off that CM Punk was so cocky last week when he just said, oh, come on, guys, it's FTR. And that is how you get to CM Punk in the pinnacle. So it takes two, just like Team Taz, it takes a couple of grumpy heels for to say, like, and they don't even need to make a big deal about it. You've got the Pinnacle cutting a promo, or you've got FTR with the belts saying, and we know that, like, everybody thought they were really cocky, that, you know, we were in the outfits last week. We heard what you said, Punk. That all it would take is that. Where'd you go next? You go to CM Punk versus Sean Spears.
Oh!
This guy who is in like this pretty cool career form in this pretty awesome stable, but is there for Punk to beat, to set up Wardlow beating Punk down, and then you've got your full gear match.
I really like that because we're what, 2 weeks away from full gear?
It's not that far. So if Tony Khan's
three weeks away.
And like, it's a pretty cool way to get to MJF, isn't it? And it's a pretty interesting pay-per-view match without it. It's got stakes and it's not, because the match is kind of on an island. But it's all about the peripheral players, isn't it?
Yeah. See, I just completely disregarded that Tony Khan notepad because I think he's a little, sneaky little bastard. So
you think that was a work?
Yeah. I don't think you take that to a Jacksonville Jaguars game, to be perfectly honest. I think you know what's written on a piece of paper that you just stood in front of cameras with. So instead of that, I was just automatically assuming that things aren't finished with Team Taz. I know you got Powerhouse Hobbs. Yeah. You got him in the Eliminator tournament. And Punk's not in it, for obvious reasons. You can't have both him and Danielson in that tournament, or Cole, or anything like that. Why not just start this three-step process to Ricky Starks at the pay-per-view?
Fair enough.
That's a pay-per-view-worthy match, and it's Starks versus Punk.
It is, you know, and I'll be honest, I felt like I was done with that, because it feels like AEW were done with that. There hasn't been much mention of Team Taz, has there? Beyond, once he's beaten Powerhouse Hobbs, it's been backburnered. Ricky Starks is really fun on commentary, and they could probably do something with that. Like Ricky Starks saying, like, I'm better than you at everything. Like, he could say, I'm better than you on that microphone, in that ring, even on commentary, nobody can touch me. And there's a little pipe bomb nod and you get that match. But I've got to go back to my own fantasy booking, because what about on the go-home rampage? If you do, and again, MJF is intentionally nowhere near this, but look what he's got at Full Gear. He's got Darby Allin, hasn't he? What about Wardlow and FTR versus Sting, Darby and Punk as the Rampage six as trios main event?
And, drinking game, yeah?
Yeah, obviously. And MJF is conspicuous by his absence at ringside, A, because he's scared of Darby Allin, B, because you don't yet want to invite that first MJF Punk coming together. You hold on to that, but you know it's coming soon.
Speaking out about what's next for people, we know what is next for Kenny Omega and Hangman Page, a AEW championship match at Full Gear, the final culmination of this excellent weaving storyline. Do you think Omega potentially responds to Hangman Page's epic promo tonight?
I hope so. I love the multitude of ways you can tell this story because of everything that has come before it. There's some threads out there that have got some great fundamentals, but you can just listen to our archive of podcasts for them as well. There are a million little details that have existed from the very genesis of this organization. You could do Kenny Omega holding a press conference just like that very first one in Jacksonville where Hangman Page promised to be the first AEW champion and he failed. So you could have Kenny Omega relive all of Hangman's failures but show how he's been the successful one, because that would be a rewriting of his own history. They came together because he was losing too, but he can pretend that, you know, that's... I was always like, because at this point he's kind of panicking, you know, that like Hangman's got his number, that he's been avoiding this challenge all along, but he's got to be all about false confidence. He's got to be about all about bluster. You know, the whole thing is that in his mind, he's done with Bryan Danielson because he drew against him. He couldn't even beat him. In his mind, Adam Cole is not a threat because he's his friend, but we know what's going on there. And obviously, Hangman Page was the third guy, and here we are. Do you know who I want to talk about?
Go on.
Sonny Kiss. Do you remember the Eliminator tournament?
The night
that everything changed. Kenny Omega.
That meme face.
For the first time ever, Kenny Omega realized that there was a bonus hard camera between the middle and the bottom rope, where if you stare through that and the rope divides your face, you look even more sort of arrogant and obnoxious than ever before. He sat there doing that meme face and then he picked Sonny Kiss up. I'm not a bad guy. Good match. That was in the tournament with which he advanced to the final to beat Hangman Page. What about if, as we always said, this is going to matter one day, Sonny Kiss becomes the guy that Kenny Omega wants to face for the AEW title instead of Hangman Page? He's like, yeah, cool idea. Well done, Joker, getting a shortcut. I want to take on a guy that is more deserving. I want to take on a guy that's been doing the reps, not taking the shortcut. Sonny Kiss, get on out here. And everybody knows what's happening. And then Sonny Kiss gives Kenny Omega the match of his life. And there's this like, Kenny Omega is trying to build what he believes is a nothing barrier on the way to Hangman Page. We've pitched Marco Stunt doing the exact same thing.
Yep.
Basically, Kenny Omega has to acknowledge that Hangman Page is the number one contender, has to acknowledge that this match is going to happen, but says, you might be the number one contender, but you're not the first one in line. Sonny Kiss, Marco Stunt, all these people we know he's just going to V-trigger his way through as a way to restore that false confidence. All these people that have existed as ancillary chapters of this legendary story have been doing things like that to try and show Hangman Page that he's not worried. And he, like, because Hangman Page's promo was so incredible. We are going to be talking about that promo 10 years from now. But the one thing he didn't do was promise that he could win.
Yes.
Because as much as he's fueled by piss, vinegar, booze, and cowboy, there is that 1% of doubt, and it's still in his mind, and he didn't promise it because he's not the guy that can. And I love that detail so much.
Yeah, for me, that's what Kenny Omega and Don Callis and the Elite have to sort of lean on. Just constantly being that reminder of, you ain't won anything yet. Mm. You know, the only thing you won because of me. Those tag titles, that was my work, really. He just takes all credit for it. And yeah, I just lean on that thing because we know he's, let's say, fragile. I think you can have a great promo combining Omega and Callis's abilities on the mic and the hype men that they've got around them, of course, of just saying like, yeah, blood, sweat, and tears, and you've gone away, and you've had a kid, and now you're all better now. Really? Are you telling the fans that? Are you telling yourself that? Because when it comes to Hangman Page being back and better than ever, that's not cowboyish. That's cowboy bullshit.
Oh, very good. Very good. I mean, I can't touch that, really. Because I was going to add, there is one other missing ingredient of this story that Kenny Omega has very quietly been telling for months, which, again, if you listen to the What Culture podcast, we've been there for you. He is starting to doubt the power of the One-Winged Angel. Is he not?
Mm-hmm.
It's been a Young Buck-supported one. It's been one through chairs. It's
super one he hit on Christian Cage.
He is worried about the power of the One-Winged Angel, but he knows it's beaten Hangman Page in the past. Doing that to Sonny Kiss, yet again. Doing that to Marco Stunt because he hates him. Whatever. You've got a couple of weeks to put over the fact that that has beaten Hangman Page before. Moreover, it's beaten everybody before, with one glaring exception. Shout out to Kota Ibushi, by the way. Get well soon. But that, I feel, should now come to the front rather than existing. It's okay for it to have been a subtle tease all this time. But in my opinion, if Paige is beating Omega and you've not really talked about the One-Winged Angel, I don't think Omega hits it.
Mm.
I know people are big into the kick out. I actually think you save that. Omega is trying, and instead you go back to Omega Ricardo 1. It's all about the counter rather than the kick out.
Mm.
So if it's not going to be part of the story now, don't expect the kick out at the pay-per-view. Hangman Page beats him by avoiding it, because there's your hook for a rematch. I would have beaten you if I'd hit it. Rematch in a year's time.
Oh.
Yeah, like that's, you, don't give it all away, because you just don't need to. Everyone else is there for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, let's look a little bit now about the AEW Championship Eliminator Tournament. Mixed emotions when this was announced, I've got to admit, because there was potential, I thought, for more from this. But still, you look at, I mean, mostly semi-final setups, but even, you know, the Kingston Archer and the right-hand side of the bracket looks fine, basically. Mm. And, you know, this is coming after Orange Cassidy, Powerhouse Hobbs. We don't know what's happened there.
Orange Cassidy's
been. It's going to be Cassidy versus Moxley on that side of the bracket. But yeah, how did you feel when it was first announced, first of all?
Right. So it was two things, and they can both, unlike WWE wrestlers, they can coexist. The first thing was, AEW, I don't think this is a hot take, AEW takes its rankings really seriously, to the point where it almost like unnaturally builds acts on Dark and Dark Elevation, and then the match feels a bit out of blue when it happens on Rampage and Dynamite or the pay-per-view.
It's like when they were talking about, like, I love him, but Seidel's record, and I was like, when's he won all these matches?
Yeah, the Gun Club's record. Like, so the rankings, but they matter. Wins and losses matter. Rankings matter. It's all good. I don't like it being a stick to beat AEW with, because for the most part, they adhere to it, and it's great. But it is weird when Ten gets in the tournament, or Dustin Rhodes gets in the tournament, or whatever. So it warrants a bit of critical analysis.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, you can, come on, guys. Like, if you were going to do this, because I trust the process immensely, and this tournament's been on the whiteboard for a few months, get Ten and Dustin Rhodes to get more wins so that it's tight. You know, so if people want to pick it, they can't, because you've closed all those loopholes. A bit disappointing. But these things are going to happen, and you've just got to hope that in the end it works out. And this is the second part of my point. He said, I think it's going to work out absolutely magnificently. So everybody has, of course, looked at the Moxley-Danielson final, which is a perfect final because the Moxley heel turn, which we have forecast for several months, is finally feeling like something they're ready to pull the trigger on, even though he's been working that for the longest time. That match is going to rule for all of those reasons. Like Moxley not giving a toss about the romance of this Bryan Danielson run, about just wanting his title back. That's all Moxley wants, and he's ready to fight people and kill people to do it. So that's, and the match is going to bang, isn't it? Like, it's just going to be a fantastic match. So it's great that that's there, and you can map how they get there and things like that. Moxley had that match with Ten. Was it during the Brody Lee feud where he injured him?
Maybe, yeah.
I could be misremembering, but I feel like there is Moxley and Ten previous, so that's quite a nice callback. The Dark Order are fully-fledged babyfaces, so Moxley's kind of a dick to be doing this to a nice guy, Preston Vance, isn't he? Mm. And he's going to do it. He's going to be horrible, just like he was horrible to Wheelie Uter, he's going to be horrible to Preston Vance. It's, you know, establishes him more as a bad guy. He's going to be horrible to Orange Cassidy. He's going to beat him. It's going to be a nasty run through the bracket for John Moxley, so there you go. I'm more interested in Danielson versus Dustin Rhodes. This is going to be a great match. This is going to be this awesome clash of ages, clash of styles, things that they're both going
to... Quite a good match with Minoru Suzuki. I'm not sure if anyone's mentioned this last week.
It's all made the rounds headline-wise. So I was able to luckily catch this one with a free 20 minutes.
Decent. The best match I've watched on YouTube this week.
Decent, I would say. I would say the best match on YouTube since WCPW was in its pomp.
Quite right.
It was unbelievable. I think Bryan Danielson versus Dustin Rhodes should be really, really great. But what I'm interested in is something they've done with Dustin Rhodes in the past, which they do really, really well. And it is astonishing how well they hide this, considering that, what's his second name? Bryan Danielson is going to beat Dustin Rhodes. And who, in the middle of a story in which his life is changing, is going to quietly seethe about that? Cody Rhodes.
Yep.
This becomes the first seed planted in a Bryan Danielson-Cody Rhodes program, at very least to culminate in an awesome TV main event, Dynamite or Rampage. Who isn't interested in Cody versus Brian? That's going to be absolutely fantastic. It's going to be super heated. Everybody hates Cody now. The response, like the crowd are just going to roar for Brian Danielson to kick Cody Rhodes' head in. Who would have ever thought that on an AEW show?
Imagine if eventually, and this is way, way, way off, Danielson's champion and Cody goes, I'll challenge for the title now.
Yeah.
What? Well, I thought you said you weren't going to. I'm the authority, so yeah. I'll probably be doing that.
I'm in a suit, mate.
Not the bloody authority again.
You haven't even got something on your T-shirt, and it's a T-shirt company.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a full suit.
I've burnt a suit. That's bad for the environment. So
this has happened, and this is what's so inspired about this company. This has happened a minimum of 3 times, right? And in those previous 3 occasions, Cody was the babyface. They can tell an identical story with him as a heel, because Lance Archer battered Dustin Rhodes in a tournament, and Cody was like, I'm going to have to take... You understand that that's my brother, and I'm going to have to destroy you for this. The Dark Order battered Dustin Rhodes in various different iterations, and Cody went for, you know, him and Brody had that thing, and now we've had it with Malakai Black, where he's had to avenge him. They do this, and they just hide it, and they're both called Rhodes. It's the and they're doing it again,
yeah.
And it feels different because Brian's a babyface, and you think, oh, there's going to... Like, this is a thing. I could foresee Brian kicking Dustin's head in and then them shaking hands at the end. And then when Cody does snap at him one day, Dustin's going to be like, what are you doing? We shook hands, it's fine. It's like, oh, so when I was in that gym and you were telling me to toughen up and telling me to get serious, and now you don't like it that I'm toughening up and getting serious because you like Bryan Danielson and you shook hands. Like, it's going to be great. It's going to be brilliant.
It is going to be great. I'd say the hardest quarterfinal to call is the same side on this, but the other bit of this semifinal bracket. Eddie Kingston versus Lance Archer, because you think, okay, well, by traditional wrestling rules, it'll be Lance Archer versus Bryan Danielson, because then you've got this killer who wants to chuck him all over the place versus Bryan Danielson, and, you know, against the odds, etc., etc. And yet, it's a mouthwatering prospect either way. I love Lance Archer. I think he's really rediscovered some form when he won that, was it IWGP US Championship?
Yep.
I thought that was a real renaissance, let's say, for him. And yet, even though they're both babyfaces and beloved by the crowd, Kingston versus Danielson.
It's just a no wonder he can take a notepad to a football game and just get distracted, fantasy booking his own promotion that he literally happens to have. Because this is just it's a warehouse of dream matches. They are stacked higher than WWE's roster was in 2019. There are so many combinations of wrestlers, this being another one. And what I love about Eddie Kingston versus Bryan Danielson is that Kingston can have one of his, like, All Japan, I don't want to call it cosplay, but like an All Japan tribute match that he loves having.
Yeah.
Danielson will be bang game, bang into that. It's going to be really, really good. It's going to be one of the best matches Kingston will have in AEW. And yet, they're going to, him and Moxley are going to be backstage together doing one of their, like, best mates promos where Kingston's going to be saying, look, Danielson, I respect you, but this is about the title. And Moxley's just going to shoot him a look. His neck's going to sharply when Kingston says he's aspiring to win the title. You've forgotten who else is in the tournament. Like, he's not going to say it, but his eyes are. And that's going to be this little moment of drama, is that Kingston's going to be thinking, like, he's almost going to be like the, like, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Brian, I know it's going to be tough, but I want to beat you because Ruthie's still waiting for a title. And this means more to me than any, like, you've tasted it. I've seen you be at the top of the mountain. I've never got there. Like, I know you can bring it, but I'm going to bring it harder on the night because nothing means more to me than the AEW title. And how much is that going to eat up John Mox? And it's not going to matter right now because Danielson's going to beat him. But just that little moment where Mox, how dare you think you're winning this? Like, have you not, do you not understand how this dynamic works? And that's how you kind of, like, pull at their fraying ends and things. I love that so much. I love that Kingston is allowed to aspire to win a belt that John Moxley is ready to fight the world for. Such, like, and this is why this tournament is really cool, because it's thrown up all these awesome combinations. I think the criticism is entirely justified.
But Archer at Kingston as well has the chance to be a bit of a low-key banger on this show, because all eyes will be on Rhodes and Black and Danielson and Rhodes, obviously. And these two just beat the crap out of each other.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is just me. I'm kind of, you know, every now and then, AEW is really good for, and this is the worst weekend to say this because you've got like a sequel on Dynamite and you've got a sequel match on Rampage and a trilogy match on Dynamite. It's not the weekend to say this, but AEW's been really cool with rematches, right? Is it me, or does it feel like Eddie Kingston and Lance Archer have wrestled each other about 100 times in various different combinations?
Yeah.
I feel like even before the Suzuki Gun, Moxley and Archer stuff, weren't they kind of overlapping when you nearly had Archer versus Pac?
Yeah.
When Kingston was still hanging out with the Lucha Brothers and the Death Triangle. And I feel like I've had this quite a lot. And it's fine because I think, as you say, it's going to be this festival of violence and it's going to put the tournament over and it's going to be fun for the live crowd. It's, especially because I'm assuming Kingston's going to win, it does feel a little bit like a formality, this. What I will say is that a tournament is as good a way as any to wrap up a feud.
Yes.
When Kingston beats Archer, you can absolutely say, yous are done now. Part ways and going to be something else.
Finally, we've got more developments with American top team Dam Lambert promising, I believe, on this Dynamite to reveal the demands, stipulations, whatever they want to call it. Basically, you know, Jericho's not done with the Men of the Year and American top team, Dan Lambert, Jorge Masvidal, JDS, etc., etc. But in Dan Lambert's eyes, we beat you, done and dusted. You know, I think everyone's saying this at the moment, but Paige Van Zandt deserves a hell of a amount of credit as well. I think she's been one of the stars of this whole thing as well. You've got Sammy Guevara, TNT champion, and the implication was, slightly worrying TNA implication was, the champions have got a lot of power, a lot of sway in this company, and he's going to make some sort of demand of Sammy if they want another match with the Men of the Year. What do you think those demands are going to be, and are you at all concerned by this? Because this has been a bit wild, let's say, the Inner Circle ATT feud.
I'm not terribly concerned because I'm a sports entertainment hack at heart, and I will tolerate a bit of nonsense when it's hot, and Christ, is this angle hot. Like, it goes down. I'm not a fan of Jericho's dated, tired verbiage, but it goes down amazingly well. I've been a proponent of Dan Lambert, like, going back probably when the few times we've been allowed to talk about, like, can you even imagine this podcast now? Who should WWE sign off the Impact roster and extend beyond two people? You know, like, but like, Dan Lambert's just one of the sole reasons that it was worth watching Impact in some doldrum years in the mid-2010s. So awesome. Stuff with Bobby Lashley and, like, American Top Team is way worth going out and checking out on YouTube. He's a natural at this, and I'm not at all surprised that they managed to, like, create this furnace-like atmosphere. I wish it wasn't on some of the content that they've leaned upon, but nonetheless, the heat is remarkable. So I'm okay with, I guess what you were inferring is perhaps a 5-on-5 where Sammy's title's on the line and the prospect of a Jericho loss is him losing his protege's belt and the kind of the emotional heft of that, the Sammy's only just won this big belt and now Scorpio Sky's got it and he didn't even, he pins Jericho to win it.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing, isn't it? Scorpio's got this record against Jericho. He's got Jericho's number. He pins Chris Jericho and Sammy's lost his belt. And that's somewhere to go, isn't it? And it feels like that's what they're going to do. It feels like everything was being set up. Those were the way the pieces are moving. A 5-on-5 at the Full Gear. I'm going to say something that myself and Sidgwick and Murray were discussing over the virtual desks. And this was a point Sidgwick made that I'd not really thought about. But he was saying, like, in as many words, Full Gear doesn't feel super hot yet. You look at the matches that you could speculate on, the Bucks and the Jurassics, Cole versus Christian, Moxley Danielson and Paige Omega will be both really awesome. But, like, those matches there, like, the fact that we've seen a lot more, like, trio and tag variants of these matches that kind of do need to pay off, the Lucha Brothers versus Team TBC, probably FTR, but their matches haven't, like, lit the world. It's not, to paraphrase Hogan in the Dungeon of Doom, it's not hard. Yeah, like, the big stuff is really awesome, but the undercard is lacking. Like, do you just cash out and go Blood and Guts too? Oof. And do American Ooh. Top Team? Because they're in a cage.
Yeah.
Like, you losers lost in that cage before and you didn't even take on real cage fighters. We are those people. We are this clear and present danger for you. Sammy's title's on the line. Jericho gets pinned. You have all this thing. In the meantime, with just a couple of weeks to go, with Jericho, we assume, soon set to go and tour. I mean, he's coming to Newcastle in December, so he's got to get on the road sooner or later. Like, going to be going back on tour. So you're going to have to, like, lift Chris Jericho off television. I want Dan Lambert, because he's mentioned this a couple of times in promos, to host a fuzzy record burning. I want a pile of fuzzy records, like when John Lennon said the Beatles were bigger than God and you had the religious zealots out there setting fire to the mountain of records. I want a mountain of fuzzy records. Either a record burning or a book burning, because I'm assuming it's like the end of series 2 with Alan Partridge and a few of them Jericho ones beginning getting off to get pulped because he wasn't allowed to sell them on Amazon and he was only allowed to promote it through Dynamite. So we had that, the labours of Jericho, so they could put that little graphic up there. If you want to see what else Jericho's done in his career, buy this $50 book. Like a book pulping, like that Dan Lambert has orchestrated, or a record burning.
He
or
drinks
like
in,
that.
It's better than the champagne.
Yeah, yeah. Just something like that to tee up something as heated as Blood and Guts. But yes, I am actually okay with Jericho taking the pin for Sammy to lose his title, but I appreciate why purists might be a little bit concerned that that's AEW leaning a little too hard into sports entertainment. You know what's leaning harder into sports entertainment? The fact that you can't do an interview backstage without getting decked. It is ludicrous. I'm glad CM Punk called it out because it's taking the piss.
Yeah, there was a battle, like, spate of them recently.
No, like, find better ways. And especially in the women's division, like, that's the go-to woman's angle, isn't it? Like, nice try, woman, having in it. Nice try, woman, getting extra TV time. You're getting decked. What does that say?
Yeah. But a hell of a development in this Men of the Year ATT Inner Circle feud, which, like you say, has gone from something that we were like, oh, I'm not sure about this, to, yeah, one of the biggest things in AEW right now.
Yeah, it's so hot. It's such a valuable thing, because if it wasn't as popular with the crowds as it would be, it would feel awkward. To mention something you sort of said before, it would have a little bit of that Cody Ogogo stuff when it felt like it was going off the rails a bit and we were all a bit, oh. But you can't deny this feud because of this. All right. Find a babyface for Paige VanZant.
Yeah.
And she doesn't need to wait. Paige VanZant can destroy her. But find a babyface in a circle associate. I'm racking my brains.
Blue, what was her name? Cora Blue. No, that's Cora Jade I'm thinking of. Sky Blue?
Sky Blue, yes. Yeah. Go back through. They're really good at this. Remember how Juventud Guerrera was somebody that they were in reference in 2019? Go back through the archives. Try and find anything you can where the inner circle have associated with a woman. Somebody, our awesome listenership, will no doubt tweet us after this.
Yeah.
Where they'll have remembered a time where Proud and Powerful have had a backstage chat with somebody, but whatever. Sonny Guevara did something in his hometown. Anyway, Pammy. Paige VanZant destroys Pammy. Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Breaks Pammy's arm. And, like, she's got her wedding photos in a sling.
Oh, don't do this.
But anyway, yeah, find, like, if somebody on the female side of the roster who's had some loose association with the inner circle and line her up for Paige VanZant, because as much as I love to see Chris Jericho getting absolutely destroyed by Paige VanZant, we know that his ego is smooth and it's not going to happen. So find a woman and make an angle out of it.
Love it. Well, let us know your thoughts ahead of AEW Dynamite tonight on Twitter at WhatCultureWW. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. The ups and downs for Rampage and SmackDown will be coming out in just a few hours' time. And then on Monday, we'll be reviewing all of the shows, Rampage, SmackDown, and AEW Dynamite with the Dudley Boys. So if you subscribe, as soon as those podcasts come out, they will drop into your feed. But for now, this has been the AEW Dynamite preview. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.